The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, he's here, Craig Johnson. He has a brand new book. It's a Longmire book again, Walt Longmire. The book is Any Other Name. Craig, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Walt Longmire, what's he been up to, man?
Well, you know, you can always count on Walt for some sort of adventure or another like that, but this one hits a little closer to home. It's actually an attempt in mind to try and broaden Walt's jurisdiction out a little bit to make it a little bit more believable, because I just got a letter, actually, from the Texas Sheriff's Association wanting me to come and speak. Actually, they wanted Walt to come and speak and explain why it was that he was the most popular sheriff, you know, in America, but had more people killed in his county than the entire state of Texas. So I'm trying to live up to those reputations like that. But in this particular book, Any Other Name, it actually takes place in an adjacent county to Absaroka County, Walt's county. And there's a sheriff's investigator who commits suicide, and he's a real kind of by the book, you know, straight ahead kind of guy, and nobody can figure out why it is that he did this. And so the widow gets in touch with Lucian Conley, the previous sheriff of Absaroka County, and he in turn grabs a hold of Walt and drags him over to Campbell County. And the problem with this, of course, is we're in the depths of a High Plains winter, and Walt has a previous problem on his hands, in the sense that his granddaughter is about to be born, his first grandchild. Like, and so his daughter is actually pregnant in Philadelphia, and he needs to get to Philadelphia. So he's only got about 4 or 5 days to kind of clear up this mystery under why it is that this inspector might have killed himself.
You know, Craig, it seems like Wyoming in your books, the Longmire series, it's only winter.
Well, as I said, you know, we have two seasons in Wyoming. We have the winter and 4th of July, and it sometimes snows on the 4th of July.
Now, I think that you mentioned in your book, in the credits here, that one of these days you'll write one with maybe some summer.
I've actually written a couple. Like, what I did was, is when I started out the series, I thought it would be interesting to do them on a seasonal basis. Like, so each book is a season. So what I tended to refer to as a Vivaldi, you know, the four seasons, like that, because, you know, the thing that has the biggest effect on us in the West is the seasons, is the weather. And so, you know, I started out the first book in the series, The Cold Dish, and that was the fall, like that, and then followed by Death Without Company in the winter, and Kindness Goes Unpunished in the spring, and Other Man's Moccasins was this first summer book. And I kind of split it up a little bit. Walt spent most of his time there in Absaroka County in the summer, but also a little bit in Vietnam in 1967, because the book kind of jumped back and forth between the two. But, you know, it gives me an opportunity to do, you know, completely different, you know, environs, you know, for each one of the books, because July is nothing at all like January out on the High Plains.
You know, with Walt there in a different county, he's looking at a suicide, perhaps, mm-hmm. and he's doing that for the wife of the deceased. Mm-hmm. Here's a suicide. Now, how come there's two shots? What's that all about?
Well, that's part of the investigation, to find out, you know, why it is that if Gerald Holman did commit suicide, why in the world did he shoot himself twice? And, you know, Walt kind of gets an indication of that early on, like that, and it turns out that Walt's suspicions turn out to be true. So I don't want to give too much of that away, you know.
All right, so what's the county like out there? I mean, it's around Gillette, is that correct?
Yeah, it is. Like, it is. It actually encompasses Gillette. You know, it's actually right there in the Powder River country between the Black Hills and the Bighorn Mountains. So it's called the Powder River Basin. And it's actually the largest coal deposit in the world, like, and has made Wyoming the largest coal-producing state since sometime in the 80s, I believe it was. And so an awful lot of trains, awful lot of open-pit coal mines, vast, you know, open-pit coal mines and gas fields. And so it's kind of interconnected with the Bakken fields, you know, up there in North Dakota. And so, you know, it's rough territory, really rough territory. An awful lot of men, you know, doing rough jobs, like, at, you know, and they tend to get into a little bit of trouble, like that, with, you know, either controlled substances or, you know, with a little bit of violence and that type of thing. And so the jail over in Campbell County in Gillette, you know, looks probably like a miniature prison more than it does an actual jail, which kind of provides a contrast, you know, to Walts County over in Absaroka County, which is, you know, certainly more of an agri-based county and a jail that has two holding cells and a couple cells downstairs. And, you know, most of the time, the only occupant they have in them is Walt sleeping on one of the bunks. So,
you know, talking about the coal, you I like the way that you describe the coal cars. And in Chicago, you can't call them hobos anymore, I guess, but they would get the cars and they couldn't get out. Maybe I was so interested in that because my brother goes to Bill, Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
and they load up the train and he rides the rails.
There you go.
And so I didn't realize that people that ride the rails would eventually get into those cars.
I guess it's according like that. You know, they actually checked, you know, with a couple of railroad detectives and a couple of sheriffs like that, and they had told me these stories, you know, that what happens is these guys, they don't know what kind of a train they're getting on like that. And so they climb up in there and then hop in into one of those coal hopper cars. Well, the problem is that the hundreds of tons of coal like that that get loaded into those things, the sides of them get slick as a mirror like that, and they're about 12 feet high. So, you know, you can get in, but you really can't get out unless you're an NBA basketball player or something like that. And so it kind of makes it a little bit tough like that, because they bring them in, you know, and a lot of times they'll be, you know, loading these coal cars, you know, at 2 a.m. in the morning or something, and it's all kind of automated, you know, so there's nobody there who's opening up a chute and, you know, and dropping that coal in. They don't even stop the trains. They keep moving, and they just drop those couple of hundred tons of coal into each hopper car. And if you happen to be in there, you're kind of like a mouse in the bottom of the coal bin, you know, whenever it gets loaded. And so it kind of provided a little bit of a kind of a blues riff, you know, for the entire book. I mean, it starts out, you know, with Walt quoting Joseph Conrad and saying that, you know, he, at one beginning of one of his books, he said, if you would want to know the age of the world, you should look upon the sea in a storm. And if you want to know the age of the Powder River country, just be on the wrong side of one of these coal cars, you know, because they're like a mile and a half long. Okay. And so an awful lot of what happens in, you know, the actual storyline of Any Other Name happens to, you know, take place, you know, in conjunction with those coal cars, because you really don't have much choice.
My father-in-law once said, and the coal cars went right past his place, that when they had an increase of trains going by, it was more like maybe they were going to go to war. Maybe the United States was going to war, and they were stocking up on that. So, you know, back probably in the 50s, that could have been correct.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Like that, it's an amazing amount of coal that comes out of that area. Like that, and it goes to a lot of different areas, like that, you know, for coal gasification plants, like that, for, you know, electricity plants and that type of thing, you know. And, you know, I'm as big of an advocate, you know, for environmentalism as anybody else like that. But until we find some kind of a, you know, financial alternative, you know, I think that coal is going to, you know, continue to make a large scale footprint. So,
well, you know, I know that you still live in Wyoming.
You cross population 25, Mark. Come
25.
On. Don't forget the crown jewel of the UCLA area. You cross Claremont, Leiter, and Arvada. If you had all those towns up, I think you have a population of about 250. So,
but the population's growing, right?
Well, no, actually, it's shrinking. You know, me and my wife, we sat there at the ranch house here a couple of years back, and we tried to name off all 25 people in U Cross, and we know everybody. So we sat there and went through everybody's names, and we only came up with 19 people. So we think we're still kind of inflated from the last census, to be honest.
So, you know, talking about energy production, fracking now going on. Is that mm-hmm. taking place close to you? And
it is.
What's
it
your
actually
thoughts?
Is. Look, I'm a little worried about that type of thing. Anybody that wants to inject anything into the ground aquifers and then doesn't want to tell you, you know, what it is, you know, because it's supposedly an industry secret, you know, well, I don't trust industry enough to let that slide by. I think that if they're going to do it, they need to tell you what's in it. Like, and, you know, they've ran into some problems down around Pavilion in the center of the state, you know, and you know, people's water is just simply undrinkable. Like, you know, and like I say, you know, I'm for energy production as much as anybody else, but I think, you know, it has to be done in a responsible fashion.
Wonder if Walt will be investigating anything like that in the future.
Never say never. Never say never. You never know where it is. Walt may be heading off from here like that. I mean, the new book, Any Other Name, it's number 6 on the New York Times bestsellers list. Look at, and Longmire, the TV show on A&E, look at, is still the highest rated scripted drama in A&E's network history and starts off on its third season on Monday.
And congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Lou Diamond Phillips, like, who's a magnificent individual. I cannot speak highly enough about him. As a matter of fact, I got a story about him just this last weekend. I was approached by the Northern Cheyenne, like, to write a speech for the Lame Deer High School, like that, for their commencement ceremonies. Like, and I got the speech written and then figured out, oh, no, I'm on book tour when they're having their commencement ceremonies. Like, and so I was, you know, talking about it to Lou when I was down on set, you know, for Longmire. And he said, well, I'll go up and read it for you. Now, how many Hollywood stars would do something like that? He jumped on a plane no more than a week after having that conversation with me, flew up to Billings, you know, got in a rental car, drove down to the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, and delivered my speech at the Lame Deer High School commencement ceremonies in the Northern Cheyenne Reservation.
Well, that was a treat, I'm sure, all the way around, wasn't it?
It was. They're still buzzing about it. They're still excited about it. I think they had the largest attendance for any Lame Deer High School commencement speech of all time. So,
I mean, you know, if you can't have Craig Johnson, I guess Lou Diamond Phillips is the next best thing.
I'm a poor second. So,
you know, in the East, it seems like they're really enamored by cowboys, and out west, Indians aren't quite, you know, the most welcome people, I guess, but here they really embrace even the Indian.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and I think it's according to where it is that you happen to be. Like that, I mean, you know, for me, the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow, you know, those are my neighbors. Those are my friends, you know. And you know, Marcus Red Thunder, who's kind of the basis for Henry Standing Bear in the books. Like, you know, I think, you know, one of the key elements there is that they're the remarkable people, and they have incredible senses of humor. I mean, they've been putting up with us for over 200 years, so I mean, they better have a sense of humor. And, you know, I'm always reminded of that great quote by Steinbeck on Americans, where he says, you know, that the Native Americans have been able to survive both our best and our worst intentions, and I'm not sure which ones are more, you know, damaging. But yeah, they're my friends and neighbors, and you know, I even consider some of them family, like that, you know, I'm that close. And so for me, the Native aspect of the books will always be a very strong part of the books. You know, I mean, it's kind of silly to think that, you know, every time I read a contemporary Western novel that doesn't have any Indians in it, I'm always thinking, you know, something wrong with that. You know, there should be some Indians in here. You know, I mean, there are some parts, I guess, of the, you know, contemporary American West where, you know, the Indian populations may be a little more sparse, but certainly not where I live.
Craig, of course, you've been writing about Walt for a while. Of course, it's turned into a hit television show on the A&E network. Mm-hmm. Now, in your mind's eye, when you were first writing Walt Longmire, you had a view, you had a voice in your own head. Now, has that changed since the television show has come out?
Not particularly. I mean, I was writing the book 7 years, you know, before Hollywood found me. And, you know, and I'll be writing the book after, you know, Hollywood leaves me off, you know, and that's fine, too, like that. But it was funny when they were starting to do the casting, you know, for Walt Longmire, because that was the real trick, you know, for the show, was to try and find somebody to play Walt Longmire. They asked me, they said, you know, well, do you ever think of any, you know, actors? What actors do you think of, you know, whenever you think of Walt Longmire? And I said, well, I really don't. I said, I've got friends and family and neighbors and everybody that I use as characters in the books. And they said, well, if you were to think of, you know, some, you know, actors for Walt Longmire, who would you, you know, think of? Like, and I said, well, you know, Joel McRae, Ben Johnson, Gary Cooper. And they said that was absolutely no help whatsoever, because all those guys have been dead for 40 years. And so I really wasn't much assistance as far as the casting was concerned, but they did actually send me the audition DVDs for the actors that they were considering. And that's how I knew that they, you know, kind of were serious about keeping me on the payroll and having me be involved as creative consultant for the TV show. And we got these ones, like, and there were all these different guys trying to play Walt Longmire, and I wasn't overly impressed with, you know, any of them. And then I finally got to the last DVD, and the name written on the envelope when I pulled it out said Robert Taylor. And I thought, well, they took my advice after all. Like, and I know they're doing amazing things with CGI, but I don't know. Like that, and I can tell you this, like that does not work with anybody under 30. Like, they don't seem to remember who the old Robert Taylor was. Like that, but this new Robert Taylor, like that, was about 6'4". Like, he's a big guy, rangy. He's got, you know, you know, he's got age on him, like that. He's got wrinkles on his face, like that. And that's one of the things I really enjoyed about him was, is he didn't look like a 6 week wonder, you know. And so I popped the DVD in, and my wife Judy and I are sitting there watching, and you know, he's doing a really amazing job, like that. You know, and my wife Judy is from Connecticut, and so you know, one of the first things she said was, he moves like a Westerner. And I believe that, you know, I believe that, you know, the environment, not only do we have an impact on the environment, but the environment has an impact on us. And, you know, and he looked like a guy who had grown up in, you know, in open spaces. And so he's doing this marvelous, audition, and he's going into this woman's house, like, and he's, you know, basically, it's a notification of death. He doesn't know this woman. He's never met her before like that. But he did the one thing that none of the other actors did. He took off his hat. And I was like, well, there's our guy, like that. He's, you know, he's got basic decency. His mom did the job. And I thought he was pretty fantastic. About that time, my wife goes, oh, my. And I turn around and look at her, and she goes, he's kind of like a TV version of you, taller, better looking, with a better voice. So I don't know. I don't like Robert Taylor as much as I used to.
You know, my wife saw a picture of you we took, and she's like, he looks like Walt Longmire.
Oh, she's overly kind. Look at, she's overly kind. Robert's a much better version. Well, actually, my wife has the best statement about that. She says that if people ask, you know, if I'm Walt Longmire, and Judy says, you know, well, Walt Longmire is who Craig would like to be in 10 years. It's just that he's off to an incredibly slow start.
All right. So who's Walt's deputies?
Oh, there are a number of them. Like that, the first one, of course, like it would be Victoria Moretti, who is the Philadelphia transplant. You know, she was a police officer in Philadelphia for 5 years, 5 years street duty, like it awarded, you know, all sorts of commendations like that. You know, she's got a father who is the chief of detectives, you know, for Philadelphia North, four brothers who are police officers in Philadelphia. So she's had to be twice as tough, twice as smart, twice as capable to be noticed half as much. But she's very much the urban voice that's in the books, you know, that provides me with a counterpoint, you know, to a series of books that takes place in the least populated county in the least populated state in America. I think that, you know, it's a pretty good balance to have her there, you know, as an undersheriff. One of the other deputies is Santiago Cesar Batoria, who's actually Basque. And an awful lot of the time I get questions, you know, from people. There are Basques in Wyoming like that. And, you know, yes, there are. There are Basques in Wyoming from that little region there in the Pyrenees, you know, between Spain and France like that. How they got to Wyoming was is that, you know, they opened up a lot of pasture land up in the Bighorn Mountains. And a lot of it wasn't particularly well suited for cattle, but it was okay for sheep. And so a lot of these ranchers started working sheep on the side, and there's hardly anything that cowboys know less about than sheep. And so, you know, they had to go find some people who actually knew about sheep. Like, and somebody came up with the idea and said, you know, well, there are these guys called the Basque, and they seem to know a lot about sheep. Let's go get a couple of them. Well, the Basque are very enterprising and tough and resilient people. And to no one's surprise, like, they kind of took off, you know, there in the high plains of Wyoming along the Bighorn Mountains. And, you know, in Johnson County where I live, you know, the Basque, you know, we have some of the largest ranches in the entire county. And to not be able to get the Basque vote means you won't be the sheriff for very long.
So you've got a lady in here that's Basque.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have to do much research on the people?
Oh, always. Like, I'm always, you know, looking for opportunities. Like, I mean, the National Basque Festival, they actually have it in Buffalo, you know, up on the mountains, you know, right there in that specific area. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities like that. You know, the Basque Museum is right over in Boise, Idaho, like that. And I'm always looking for opportunities to find research materials. And sometimes it's a little bit tougher. You know, I mean, it's I'll be honest with you, it's actually easier to find information on the Northern Cheyenne than it is the Basque, you know. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, whether or not that the culture has a kind of a written, you know, history. And, you know, with the Basques, it's an awful lot of oral tradition like that, but not a great deal of writing, at least not the ones, you know, that came to the American West. And so, you know, boy, every time I find books on the Basque, I treasure those. Like, I can grab a hold of them like a dog with a bone.
You know, when I read a book like Any Other Name, or the Longmire series, as far as that goes, you see it on television, you watch Walt, and he's got that certain cadence when he talks and walks. And when I'm reading these books, there's nothing better than to go outside, crack that book open, and just start reading it in that cadence. And I think that's great. You've nailed it.
Well, thank you. Like, it was kind of a little bit of an epiphany for me, I have to admit, because Greer Shepherd, one of the big producer for the show, like, that I remember when we were in development, one of the things she asked me was, she said, "Well, do you think of Walt as being a verbose, you know, kind of character, Craig?" And I said, "Oh yeah, absolutely, I do. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the books are, you know, basically a first person monologue all the way from the beginning to the end." And she pauses for a second. She goes, "I'm not talking about what he thinks, Craig. I'm talking about what he says." And I had a little epiphany there where I thought, well, wait a minute. And so I opened up one of my books and noticed that, you know, Walt will think for about two or three pages and then he'll say one sentence, you know. So true to the iconoclastic, you know, Western, you know, format, like that, he doesn't speak a great deal like that. But, you know, when he does, he talks slow and he means what he says like that. And for me, it's kind of encapsulated. It was in that first season of Longmire. They actually took one of the line sequences, you know, from one of my books, and Vic is watching Walt for a moment and says, "You know, what are you doing?" And Walt says, "Thinking. I sometimes do that before I talk."
He's like the Columbo of Wyoming.
I don't know. A 6'4" Columbo, like, that carries a Winchester and a Colt 45? I don't know. He might be a little bit more capable than Columbo. I don't know.
Craig, you just mentioned, you know, they took that part out of the book. And the question I had right before you mentioned that was, have they looked at your books and taken any scenes out of that and rewrote something into one of the shows?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm kind of, you know, proud of the fact that, you know, the type of books that I write, you know, really aren't easily encapsulated in a 42-minute teleplay. You know, they're 350, 400-page books with numerous subplots, you know, and an awful lot going on in them. So it's kind of difficult for them, you know, with the limitations that they have in that teleplay format where they have only 42 minutes. I mean, they don't have 42 minutes and 20 seconds. They got 42 minutes. You know, for them, it's a little tough, you know, to try and encapsulate a lot of that information. But what they do is they take bits and pieces, like, from the books, you know, and, you know, try and utilize as much of those as they can. Some, you know, more than others. You know, some will take a subplot or an idea from one of the books, you know, and go off in a different direction. And then some, you know, will attempt to try and actually, you know, have an entire, you know, eclipsing of, you know, the book. And I think the first episode of the second season, I think the episode itself was called An Unquiet Mind. Was actually pretty much a retelling of my seventh book, Hell is Empty. It's always interesting for me to see, you know, what it is they're going to do and how exactly it is they're going to do it, because I'm not a, you know, a wardrobe expert. I'm not a, you know, an acting expert. I'm not a TV executive, you know. So what I do, what I help them with, is the scripts. They actually send me the synopsis, you know, for each one of the episodes. I give them feedback on that, and then they send me the, you know, the episode itself, and then I read through like that and give them a line added on it, you know. And some things we agree on, some things we disagree on like that, but most generally they have pretty good reasons for the things that they do, because, I mean, you know, what necessarily makes a good book does not necessarily make for good television, and vice versa.
When you're traveling, and you do travel a lot, especially on book tours.
I do. Well, the shows is actually on in, I think, 200 countries. The books have been translated into more than a dozen languages. Like, and so I'm actually finding that I'm doing a lot of international touring, too, to go along with the domestic travel for the books.
Well, you know, Wyoming, such a slow pace out in the West. You know, what do you think of the other places that you go and countries, faster, slower sometimes?
Oh, definitely faster. Like, you know, definitely faster than Wyoming. But I mean, that's the fortunate thing about what I do. You know, I mean, I've got a ranch that I built. I mean, I built, you know, I poured the concrete, stacked the logs, and did it all myself. It's kind of a nice place like that because it is isolated and it does provide the focus that I need to be able to sit down and write the books that, you know, that I want to write. But, you know, the other thing that I really enjoy is going out and meeting the people who read my books. You know, I always think about all of the authors that never got the opportunity to go out and do that. And, you know, for me, it's an honor and a wonderful opportunity to go out and meet all of these people and let, you know, and talk with them about the characters, about the books, about what's going on and all these things. And, you know, it's a nice balance, I have to admit. I mean, you know, I can't deny that my street cred around the ranch went up remarkably with my wife whenever I started being able to take her to Europe, you know, two or three times a year. That's kind of been helpful as far as, like, you know, keeping that Connecticut girl out there in a town of 25 or 19.
So what country would you say is the biggest fan maybe of something like the Longmire series?
France, by far. We're actually on the bestsellers list, you know, in France. And the TV show is doing really, really well in France. But, you know, it's doing very well in a lot of different places. You know, South Africa, Norway, England. I mean, you know, it's kind of Poland. It's kind of crazy to see. I mean, Longmire is showing in every country in the continent of Africa right now. And that's a little bit scary to me like that, because it seems like now I'm kind of responsible, you know, for the imagery that, you know, the rest of the world has for the, you know, the contemporary American West. And that's a little, you know, it's a little daunting when you first think about that. But then I start thinking about it and I think, okay, well, Walt's a decent guy. He's a good guy. He's a kind person. He cares about people. And I think to myself, you know what? There are worse, you know, emissaries to have out there floating around than Walt.
Well, you know, I guess you can't kill Walt off ever in a book because you'd have a worldwide riot.
I think people would be waiting for me at the end of my ranch road, be ready to kill me. And I, you know, I don't, I you know, I've been asked that numerous times, you know, would I ever think about killing Walt off? Would I ever think about doing a Sherlock Holmes, like getting, pushing him off the Rheinsbeck, you know, falls or whatever. But I don't know. I guess the best insurance against that is that I really enjoy Walt's company. He doesn't annoy me when I write about him. I really enjoy him and enjoy his company.
All right. Well, if we want to find out more, and I should ask, you probably have another Walt Longmire book almost finished.
I sure do. Look, I'm about 14 chapters into Dry Bones, which the title actually comes from the spiritual, you know, them bones, them dry bones. Like, and I don't know if you know or not, like that, but there was actually the largest Tyrannosaurus Rex ever excavated in a paleontological dig, was right there on the borders of Wyoming. Like that, and it was the largest T-Rex ever found. Like that, and there were a lot of issues like that, because it was found by the Black Hills Institute, and then the problem was is they paid the rancher whose land they found it on. They paid him about $17,000 for it, and he rapidly figured out that it was worth a heck of a lot more than that. And so he claimed it. Like that. Well, the problem was he was an Indian rancher, and so the tribe came in, decided no, that they were going to claim it. Like that. Well, then the federal government came in and said, no, that's actually on lease land from the federal government, so we're going to claim it. And I just thought to myself, boy, does that sound like a Walt Longmire mystery.
Sounds like a love triangle to me. Well, if I'm interested in finding out more about Longmire, Craig Johnson, your books, where do I go?
You know, probably the best source I can think of would be my website, like that, which is craigallenjohnson.com, CraigAllenJohnson.com.
We'll find photos, maybe.
Oh, a little bit of everything.
Okay. Chapters, maybe, to read and everything.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, hey, hop over there to Craig's website. Check that out. Check out the brand new book, Any Other Name. You know, these books are pretty much standalone, but I think you'd want the whole series.
You probably will, but you can jump right in and start with Any Other Name. Won't hurt you at all.
Hey, check out A&E Network Longmire. Craig, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Mark. Good to be here.
Hey, you know, it's always great to see Craig Johnson talk about our old friend now, Walt Longmire, and see what he's been up to. And you can do that also in his brand new book, Any Other Name. I'm Mark DeWitt for Cover to Cover.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.